Welcome to Movie Dudes, episode 201. I am Jeff, joined as always by Chris.
Hey.
And we got actually a handful of new movies. We got like three newish movies this week, including the Pet Sematary remake. But we're going to save that for the end so we can throw some spoilers at the very end of it. So instead, we're going to start off with one that, Chris, you saw, but I didn't get to see, which is called Shazam.
Yeah, Shazam, the latest DC movie in their DC cinematic universe. I don't know what the hell they're calling it. I don't know. So yeah, it's the Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman universe that now has Aquaman and such. Shazam takes place there. It is implied that the events that Batman and Superman exist in this world. It's directed by David F. Sandberg, who he did Lights Out and Annabelle Creation.
Okay
films.
Yeah.
Shazam's pretty good. It's a little bit long. It's a little over 2 hours long. But it kind of tells a story of this kid who he gets lost as like a three-year-old kid or something at a carnival. And
where have I heard this story recently?
And he gets lost and his mom never finds him, basically. So he is then fast forwards into the future a little bit, where he's like a 13 or 14 year old kid, I think. And he he's been bouncing around foster homes and such, and he keeps looking for his mom. He gets placed in this group home in Philadelphia. And from there, shit happens. He ends up standing up for one of his foster brothers who's getting picked on. And he ends up on a train hiding from these people. And because of his good deed, he gets called into this cave where this old wizard dude has been waiting around to create a hero for the people, because the seven deadly sins have escaped into the world. Yeah, it's nutso. Basically, he imbues this kid with magic, and when the kid says Shazam, he becomes a superhero. Straight up, red costume, white cape, bullet immunity, fireproof, can fly, everything you expect from a superhero. But he is, mentally a 14-year-old kid.
Oh, so he transforms into an adult.
Yeah, yeah.
Weird.
It's like I don't know
how I didn't pick up on that from the trailer.
He says Shazam, and he becomes this older guy, with the power, the superpowers. So it's mostly played for goofball comedy early on, because it's very biggish. In the fact that this kid is now in an adult body and is seen as an adult and can play that role. But he's also playing the role of a superhero, which he knows nothing about. So, it's played for comedic parts, and kids are a little selfish, so he's kind of a dick. But not in a mean-spirited way, just he doesn't really know how to deal with complex things. So he just comes off as dickish in certain instances. He doesn't know his own power and stuff like that. So he's coming into understanding all of this. In the meantime, there's this other guy who's the villain, and he is he was also brought in before the magic guy. But the magic guy rejected him because he wasn't pure of heart. This guy has spent his entire life searching for a way to get back there so that he can capture the seven deadly sins and release them. And basically takes on their powers, and he can release these like demons from him. And that's the main villain. And so Shazam, or Billy, the kid, like, ends up having to fight him. It ends up having a pretty cool message in the end. Like, think, like, you know, the fact that the kid is in a foster family, a group home, that, like, fighting by yourself is not necessarily the best way to do things. So it has an interesting end. I don't know a whole lot about Shazam, so I don't know if that's, like, a thing.
I know nothing, so this is all new to me.
Like, I know that Shazam was originally Captain Marvel, I believe. Like, in the DC universe.
What?
Yeah, like, before, or, like, Mr. Marvel or something like that. But I guess they're, you know, with the whole Marvel actually having a Captain Marvel as well, they butted heads, and Shazam being a, like, lower tier character, they backed off, and so now I guess he's just called Shazam. I don't really know. Yeah, I thought it was pretty cool seeing, like, Philly in the picture. It's also funny watching a movie where you live.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Because they get things wrong. like it's things that, like, you wouldn't notice because you don't live here.
Yeah.
And it's things that, like, people can do around the country. Like, for instance, one of the scenes in the trailer is Shazam and, like, the other kid. Like, they stop a robbery in a, basically what's like a 7-Eleven, a Quickie Mart or something. But the reason he's in there is because he wants to buy beer. You can't buy beer in Pennsylvania in a convenience store.
Like, you're one of those states.
Yeah, you have to go to a specific store. Actually, like, recently, within, like, the last year, you can go to like the grocery store, but you have to, like, it's not like you can put a beer, like a six pack of beer, into your cart and buy it with everything else. You have to separately buy it.
I actually have a store here like that in town. Yeah. Really weird.
Like, where you have to buy, like, separately.
And you have to buy the beer in the liquor section or whatever. Yeah. Liquor in the liquor section. That's
so like, yeah. Like, so I think that's funny, because, like, most, like, I can go, I believe, even down the state, and, like, I can look into Delaware, and I think I can buy, like, in a 7-Eleven or something, I can buy beer. So it's always, like, weird to see that.
Really weird to me, because it's like, I wouldn't think of Pennsylvania as, like, a, I don't know, like, a conservative state, you know what I mean? Like,
oh, it's very, like, I mean, there's Pittsburgh and Philadelphia, which are fairly liberal, but, like, the joke here is that the middle is basically Kentucky.
So, yeah.
Like, we refer to it as Pennsyltucky. It's like, so there's, like, weird things like that. Like, I am very familiar with the area around the art museum, and, like, there's scenes there. It's like, that can't happen there. this thing they're doing just doesn't make any sense. And also, like, what kids are, like, able to, like, where is this house that they live in, and how are they, like, able to walk to the art museum in the middle of the night? It's just not things that just don't make sense. So it's like, I found that a little amusing. But overall, it's a pretty decent film. I think the kid and the guy who plays Shazam are actually, like, quite charismatic. The villain is decently, like, he's cartoonish villain, but Mark Strong. I don't know other things he's been in. But He plays the villain. He's mostly, like, he plays this cartoonishy villain. But that's kind of fits what this film is.
I was just saying, it looks like a cartoonish film.
Yeah,
it looks like
pretty. It's not a serious. It's not like, you know, Man of Steel or you know, any of the Batman versus Superman or anything. Like, it's not a dark film. It's very upbeat. It's very light. It does have, like, the weird, like, kid lost his mom. And she never came, like, they follow up on that in a weird way that I think they could have cut and maybe trim this film to under 2 hours, but whatever. I mostly liked it. I'm going to give it a 3. I think if like you are not tired of superhero films at this point, and there are so many of them, it's worth a watch. But if you're like a little burned out on them and you're still going to go see like Endgame, I would just wait, because that's going to be a 3-hour nightmare.
I just, for whatever reason, I thought like watching the trailer, to me, it just looks stupid, like really bad. And I know people are generally liking it, so maybe I'll check it out later.
It's fun. It's very lighthearted. So it's like, they do a nice callback to Big too.
Was there a keyboard scene?
Yeah. Yeah, like they threw it in, and like, I was like, yeah, that's cute.
Well, that's the other thing I was thinking too, is like when he said the premise, which I had somehow missed, that's like what it was. Like, wow, that's kind of like a Big thing.
Yeah, except like, and Big, like, isn't he? He's like trapped as the adult, right? Until he can get back to the fortune teller machine.
Yeah, like, he makes a wish, and it's just like just happens. Yeah, you know?
Like Billy can transform. You know, at first he doesn't understand how. Like, he's like, well, how am I stuck this way? But once he figures out like the secret to kind of, he can do it at will. Which also causes destruction every time he does it, because a big lightning bolt comes down and blasts the area. So if he does it inside, like, shit's getting fried. But yeah, it's a fun little movie.
Well, I probably won't see it in the theater, but I might see it down the road.
All right.
I have another semi new film. It wasn't like it was just in theaters or whatever, but just came to Hulu. I think it was in, you know, very limited run theaters, like in like probably late last year, like December-ish.
Okay.
Nice little Christmas movie called Destroyer.
It's a very wonderful Christmas title.
Yeah. it has nothing to do with Christmas. It looks like it was released right around
that time.
It was a Christmas Day release. Dear God. Yeah. So this film's called Destroyer. I could see why it bombed. I mean, that's not a movie you'd want to see on Christmas. Anyways, it's directed by Kieran Kusama, who did The Invitation, which I really liked.
Yeah.
And it stars Nicole Kidman. So I don't know if you've seen the trailer for this.
I have not.
Okay. I want to say I saw the trailer at maybe that Clint Eastwood movie, The Mule or something.
Okay.
Anyways, I remember it sticking out and being like, oh yeah, I wanted to see that. And it just came to Hulu. So I was like, hell yeah, I jumped on it. And it's like this crime drama, again, starring like Nicole Kidman in like, you know, I mean, she's a great actress, but you know, this is like a gritty fucking, you know, this is like when Charlize Theron did that movie where she played the serial killer. It's like that.
Okay.
One of those types of turns where she's playing like this fucking strung out like cop in this, like undercover cop. Well, she's just a cop when you find her at the beginning of the film, and she finds there's like a dead body and there's some money with some like the dye that the banks will put in bags when you rob them.
Yeah.
You know, the money's like stained with the dye from the bank. And she recognizes that, and it kind of like flashes back to like years earlier when she was an undercover cop working in, you know, kind of trying to infiltrate this crew of bank robbers. And so she sees this dead body at the beginning of the movie and this money, and she like recognizes it as the guy that she was undercover trying to take down like a decade ago or whatever, right?
Right.
And she's like, this motherfucker's back. And you're like, okay. And she, you know, she's like, sure, he's back. And then like she kind of goes on her own secret mission, you know, kind of like on her own time to find and like kill this dude. And you're like, what the fuck? You know, some kind of like revenge type thing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then it kind of like flashes back to 10 years earlier when she was undercover trying to take him down. And it goes, you know, between, you know, now and then, and you get to see like what went down back then and why, you know, why she's so like determined to fucking take this guy out. You know, it's I think it's a pretty decent crime drama, you know, if you're into that genre. Little slow paced, but you know, I think the reason to watch this is Nicole Kidman, who is great in it. And it, you know, she's wearing like a ton of like age makeup in this.
Yeah, so is she the one that's on like the poster?
Yes.
Like, yeah. I like looking at it, and I'm like side by side with like a clip from the film, and I'm like, they don't look the same. Like,
you know, and it's age makeup to basically make her look her age. And then when they take the makeup off is when she's in the past, because she looks like she's 20 years old still somehow.
Right, even though she's like 51.
Yeah, like she's still unbelievably, you know, beautiful and young looking. But yeah, not here for like huge chunks of it. And this is a good, great, gritty performance from her. And again, like I said, like a little slow paced, but you know, if you're into the genre, I'd say it's a pretty good, satisfying one. Some kind of okay twists that you may see coming, you may not. But, you know, it's like nothing amazing or anything, but it wasn't, you know, I didn't regret the 2 hours I spent watching it. So I don't know what else to say about it really other than that. I mean, there is a really like this movie's not like overly violent or anything, but it's just kind of downbeat, you know, and kind of like a gritty feel to it. Mm-hmm. And there's this really nasty scene with her like jerking this guy off for info that came out of nowhere. I was like, whoa, okay, you're really trying to be like hardcore here. But, yeah, for the most part, like I said, I came away from it thinking it was good. It's, you know, it's not going to be one of my all-time favorite, you know, genre exercises, but she's good in it. She's always good in everything, and this is kind of like an interesting turn from her. So, you know, it's on Hulu. If you want, you know, if you're in the mood for like a crime movie, you could definitely do worse.
Yeah. How is Tatiana Maslany in it? Like, I see that she's in it from Orphan Black. Do you know her?
Yeah, I'm like looking at a picture of her now. I'm trying to remember who the hell she was in it, to be honest. Oh, I think I know who she was. I think I know. Maybe I'm wrong, though. I guess not that good. I'm trying to figure out who she actually played in the movie.
You're not remembering her. She was somebody named Petra, but
okay, like, that's who I thought. I mean, she's fine. She's not in it like a ton. She's kind of a pivotal character, but
right.
Yeah, no
she's
one.
Like, she's like listed as like third build, so I was like, all right.
Yeah, she kind of plays like a big character in this, kind of. But like again, a lot of it is you're spending time with Nicole Kidman, and okay. If I had to put like a second billing, it would be this guy Sebastian Stan, who was like this other cop that was undercover with Nicole Kidman back in the day, and they were like. So they're both, like, hanging out with these fucking bank robbers and shit and undercover, and they were, like, doing drugs with them and all that. And, like, while this is going down, while they're undercover, they kind of fell in love with each other as undercover. So maybe you could guess where the stuff with that would go. But, you know, it's good for what it is. Again, it's, like, not going to be everyone's favorite, you know, example of this type of movie, but... It was fine.
Yeah, all right.
I'm really selling it there, but that's kind of, you know, it's kind of right in the middle. I guess I had two other films I wanted to touch on briefly before we get to Pet Sematary.
Yeah.
One, you know, these are both older. One is a film called Q. Longer term is Q, the Winged Serpent from 1982. So this is from the Wayback Machine. Saw it on this week's Joe Bob show. And it was it's a Larry Cohen film who he like just died like a week or two ago. He like wrote and directed this. And I had never heard of it, never seen it. Have you ever heard of Q the Winged Serpent, Chris?
No.
This is a fun one. It's let me try to describe this to you. It is a monster film.
Okay.
About this fucking dragon in New York City who's just like grabbing people off of rooftops and eating them and shit. And you have this kind of like small-time crook, like low-level mob guy who he's doing like some sort of robbery and he's running away, and he like stumbles upon the lair for this dragon. and then he goes to the police to tell them that, like, he'll tell them where the dragon is if they give him $1 million. So it's ridiculous. It's just like this ridiculous plot of a fucking monster movie, and it like feels like, you know, it's from 1982, but the effects and shit look like, you know, this was made over the course of a week in like the 1950s. Like, it looks like a 1950s monster movie, you know.
Oh, I'm looking at some images from it. It totally looks that way.
The opening of the film is like, there's like this lady and she's like working in an office in a skyscraper. Mm-hmm. And there's a window washer behind her. And she's like, yeah, this fucking pervert's always like, he's always washing my windows like way too much. He loves looking at my ass. And she like turns around, looks at him, waves, hi, how you doing? And then cuts to the guy outside and he's like washing her window. And he's like, man, she's hot. I'd like to have her. And then the dragon swoops in and fucking rips his head off. And that's the open scene. Like, it's just like, it's just ridiculous. It's like bouncing from ridiculous to ridiculous thing. I found it to be quite a lot of fun for what it is. You know, I was like appreciative actually for, you know, I wouldn't have watched it if not for the Joe Bob thing. And now I'm like, well, at least I know another Larry Cohen film. Besides, I think I've only seen like one or two of his other films. This was a lot of fun. So yeah, it's on Shudder. So if you got Shudder Crystal, check it out. You can watch it with Joe Bob. Make it a little bit longer, but yeah, just ridiculous. I give it 3 stars.
Nice.
You know, this is a low. It's a like this epic monster movie that takes place in New York City that was made for a budget of $1 million. So, you know, you could tell, but it's a lot of fun for what it is.
It looks like those early like Godzilla films.
Yeah, like it looks straight up like a guy in a fucking suit running around almost or whatever. You know, it's just bad looking, but you know, imaginative and fun, and it kind of moves pretty quick. There's just something like I wasn't familiar with at all, so it was like cool being introduced to something new. I think it was worth it. Like I said, you know, I'm not gonna go crazy high on it, but 3 stars.
Nice.
And lastly, before we get to Pet Sematary, Chris, I wanted to touch on this one real quick. Mostly because I saw some people like kind of talking about it on Twitter one day, and then I just noticed it's on Amazon Prime now.
Okay. So
you can watch it if you want. It's called Short Term 12. It's like an indie film from 2013, I think. It's about an hour, you know, hour 37 minutes long. And it's about these people that, you know, it's about these kids in a group home and the people who work there. You know, it's just kind of this nice little indie movie about their lives, like all their lives and kind of, you know, what brought them there and this and that. And the one thing that like stood out to me right away is this movie has a pretty awesome cast. Like, mm-hmm. of people who, like before they were famous. So you have Brie Larson in the lead. She's great as one of the workers in this place. You have Lakeith Stanfield as one of the troubled kids that are living there. He's actually a very troubled kid who's, like, just about to turn 18 and leave the place. You have Rami Malek as like a guy kind of on his first day here, getting like situated. I'd say those rounding out, I guess, like the main cast is a guy named John Gallagher, who's very good in it as, you know, as Brie Larson's like coworker / love interest. I guess one other notable person, at least for me, that pops up is Stephanie Beatriz, who is on Brooklyn Nine-Nine now.
Okay.
Interesting cast. And also, like, Melora Walters pops up from one point, who, you know, if you've seen Paul Thomas Anderson's films, she's, like, in a bunch of them. Anyways, I think a really good cast and really good movie. like well worth it. So if you have Amazon Prime, check it out.
All
right. You know, it's like I said, it's basically what I described, but it is, I'd say, a pretty powerful little movie. Some of it is very, very potent, and you know, I think will get you a little bit emotionally. But I mean, that's the point of it. It's a, you know, kind of a drama about you know, some tough subjects, I guess. Brie Larson's great in it too, so I'm gonna give it 4 stars there, Chris.
Okay,
it's nice. Like, definitely. If any of that sounds interesting to you, definitely check it out. Let's get to the heart of today's episode, though.
Yeah.
So, Pet Sematary, Chris. We have a remake here.
Yeah.
And the
we do.
Year of Our Lord, 2019. This was, I think, a book from 1983 by Stephen King.
Yes.
And it was a 1989 film, which I think you and I are pretty familiar with. I did not get to rewatch it, though.
Not either, but I'm familiar enough with it. I know how that film goes.
Yeah, and you know, I guess I'll just say how I feel about it before we even get to this into like this remake specifically. But like, I don't think I've ever read the book. I think I mentioned that last week. I'm like, yeah, pretty sure I haven't, although I own it. So maybe I did. I don't know. I've read a lot of books, so it's sometimes hard to keep track. I'm familiar with the film, you know, and based just off the film alone, I think it's like kind of one of my favorite stories. It's just like it touches on the darkest things, I think.
Yeah.
But you know, the last time I did watch the 1989 film, I thought it felt pretty dated. Like, it still largely was pretty okay, but I was like, it felt due for an update. So when I did hear that they were going to remake it, I was like, cool, you know, I'm not against them doing remakes of it. You know, I hope they remake all of Stephen King shit. You know, who knows? It might be better.
There's tons of films out there. Like, I mean, there's a couple that are like exceptionally good films, but you could remake most of his stuff and it would be okay.
And I'd say, you know, the It remake is better. So,
oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So that's kind of my attitude going into this. Then I saw the trailers and I thought that doesn't look great. And I thought, I didn't love the cast. I didn't love how John Lithgow didn't have like that super crazy accent that Fred Gwynn had from the 1989 one. And I don't know, I was just getting a weird kind of vibe off the trailer. I didn't like it. I'm not a huge fan of Jason Clarke, the main, like the dad here.
Right.
But then reviews rolled out from South by Southwest and they were praising this thing to the moon and back. And I was like, all right, cool, dude. Like, all right, it's going to be fucking great. And, like, people were saying, oh, they made some big changes, and it's really dark this time. And the ending, like, with, you know, the changes that they made to the ending are great, and it's even more hardcore horror and blah, 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 blah. And I was like, fuck yeah, sign me up. And that's kind of how we left last week's episode. So enough previously on. Now we've seen it. Chris, I know this is one of your favorite Stephen King stories. Break it down for me, man.
Fuck this movie.
A lot of preamble.
Like, I just know. Yeah, so it. where to even start with this? Jesus Christ. It basically follows the premise of the original. Like story, right? Like,
yeah.
Doctor, wife, they move up to Maine with their kids. They happen to live not too far from a pet cemetery. Cat dies. The kindly neighbor introduces them to hey, like, we could bring the cat back. It doesn't really explain it in such a way, but like, hey, let's go bury it here.
Yeah, beyond the pet cemetery.
Yeah, and then cat comes back, right? After that, the film takes some turns. Like, it diverges very much from both the story that Stephen King wrote, the novel, and from the original film as well. They do some flipping of the, you know, primary character who dies, yeah, and has to be, like, they switch that. So instead of the, like, younger child who's like 2 or 3, I believe, they switch it to the older one. And then they, like, I don't know, they rush through, I believe, like, the last maybe third of the film, which is where all this kind of happens. And then they get to the ending, and oh, they shit the bed.
Yeah, I'd agree. And I guess we'll save that for the very end of our discussion.
Yeah.
Like, the specifics on that. But, you know, like, I don't think it's a spoiler to say beforehand that the daughter dies here, because they put that in the trailer.
Yeah,
it's so
it's in the trailer.
You already know. Y'all know. If you're listening to this episode, you know. So,
Unlike you, like, I actually like the trailers for the film. Like, I like the kind of, like, creepier vibe. I enjoy the original film. I enjoy the book a ton. But yeah, like, looking for something a little more modern, a little more, you know, kind of maybe a little more gritty, even, like, in terms of cinema today. So, like, I was getting a cool vibe from it, and, like, the way they have the kids in the procession, like, they make a really big deal out of that in the trailer. That, like,
I knew that was just going to be window dressing. I knew it.
That's exactly what it is. It's only there for, like, 90 seconds. Like, yeah, they spend the entire trailer, like, with that, like, awesome kind of, like, creepy beat that the kids playing in their procession, and, like, it's nothing. It's just like a little device to get the little girl Ellie to kind of, like, wander off and discover the pet cemetery on her own.
Yeah,
and it's which
Judd is hanging out in, fucking just,
yeah, like, just chilling weirdly in there. Like, he's a little creepy, but not creepy enough. Like I thought that was a little weird. Like, when the mom, like, comes and finds her in the pet cemetery, like, I don't know. He should have, like, I would be like, get the fuck away from my daughter, you weirdo.
Like, yeah,
she was like, okay.
I will say this about the movie. For one, I ended up liking Lithgow.
Yeah, he's Lithgow fine. Or
Lithgow. I thought he was fine. He, like, he's a really good actor. So I should have known. He would have won me over.
I think he's one of the stronger points.
Yes, I think so too. I actually didn't hate Jason Clarke.
Okay.
He's one of the, like, I don't think he's leading man material, and they keep trying to kind of make him happen. And
he has, like, no charisma.
Like,
so dry.
But I think he kind of, like, worked here in a way. And again, like, as the film's going along, I'm kind of with it. Like, I was kind of like, it basically hits the same beats as the original film. It's just like, all right, we're just kind of doing the same thing here, you know, changing this and that a little bit.
Yeah, they add a bit more, like, story in, like,
I think they cut from other places too, it feels like.
Yeah.
I feel like Judd explained more about the pet cemetery in the original film, maybe.
Yeah, there's like no explanation, like, really. It's like when he does, like, a Google search or something. It's like in, like, 20 seconds.
Like, doesn't Judd tell him about, like, the dude that came back? Like, I don't think he does that here.
No, he certainly
doesn't. Yeah, you just see it on, like, some microfilm.
Yeah.
Or whatever the fuck. Oh, yeah, he's just Googling it. Fuck microfilm. Like, people do still do that. but, yeah, so I was kind of with it. But then, like, the problem I had with this is the same thing one of the same problems I had with It, which was a film I really liked. But, you know, even with It, it felt like we're rushing through a lot of shit really fast, and even more so here, because this is just, you're just taking that one book and making it, what is, hour and 40 minutes filming.
Yeah, it's a relatively short movie.
It just feels like it moves at such a clip that you don't feel the impact of anything when it happens.
What's like, so we like briefly talked like via text after I saw it, well, after you saw it, I guess. And like, I think the pacing is off in the movie. Like it feels very like very even, I think, in the beginning. But it takes a while to kind of get where it needs to go. And then it hits this point, and then all of a sudden they just rush through as much as they can.
Yeah, it's like, we only have 20 minutes left or something. It's like, right. No, you like, can make it 2 hours. It's okay.
Like, if you have more story to tell and it's worth telling, do it. Like, don't rush through it like this, because you had a pretty decent start, and I was okay with it. Like, you know, even with like the changes that they had decided to make, I was on board with it, kind of like you were. And then I don't know,
you know, and like, just sticking to the pacing for one more second. Like, when I think about a show like Mr. Mercedes, which took a 300-page book and turned that into a 10-episode, TV drama,
right?
You know, something like this, which is, you know, not a super long novel, but it was at least 300 pages, right? You know, and then you just condense it into this hour and a half thing, and we're hour and 40 minutes. It's just like you lose too much, I think.
Well, and I don't see what they gained by bringing in the storyline of her sister in this. Like, it's straight out of the book. Like,
I mean, that's in the original too, as well, right? With Zelda and that.
Yeah, but they go into it, I think, a little bit more here. It's like, but ultimately, it doesn't really impact, because the ending shits on all the themes that the book has. So it's
like, well, yeah, it's like, because it's funny. I think I'm like, We Hate Movies. They did the 1989 film recently, and they were kind of talking about that too, like the. You know, like, what was the point of having all this shit with Zelda in there? I think they were like, well, you know, it's a movie about facing death, and it's kind of dealing with the fact that, like, she was never able to face it. You know, it kind of touches on the themes. But, yeah, again, it is kind of like a secondary thing that didn't need to be fleshed out even more.
Right. You know? It's like, we don't need to spend, like, 15 minutes of your already short film focusing on this when it ultimately doesn't impact, because Rachel is such a minor character in this iteration of the story.
Yeah, so I'm trying to think what else, like, you know, there's something else about it I didn't like too before we get into like the ending itself. Oh, I think the switch is for the worst. I've seen people say that no, they like really like the idea of having the older sibling be the one that's brought back.
No,
I think that does us a disservice. Like, what do you think? Yeah, I'll tell you. I have reason why.
I think it, not that like a child dying at any point is tragic. Like, so that doesn't change here, but a smaller kid being brought back in such a way and becoming like this evil demon is far more creepy than like this 11-year-old girl or however old she was. She does a good creepy performance. I think she's fine, but like having a like 3-year-old kid basically like become living Chucky.
Yeah.
Is far more terrifying to me, because they're far more innocent at that age. Like, she knows like right from wrong, you know, when she dies.
She's old enough to be able to play at being an evil person, whereas right. Like someone that little, that's part of it. It's just unnerving seeing a kid that little be evil.
Yeah.
But I have another reason too, which occurred to me, is like when she comes back in this, it's super obvious that she's evil right away. But when you have a kid that can barely like talk at this point, you can just be like, I don't know what's up with this kid. Is he like, is he okay? Is he gonna like snap out of it? Like, just you know what I mean? They're less,
yeah.
You know, because she's so older here and can communicate. You're like, yeah, you're evil as fuck. Like, you're saying everything like a supervillain right. as soon as you come back, you know?
Like, it's, yeah, she's more, you know, in touch with being a person than a 2 or 3 year old is. So there's no mystery to it at all. And that's part of the problem with the, you know, the last third of this film is that it's so fast and at fast pace. It's like, well, we got to get, like, we have to reveal that she's bad right from the get go. Like,
yeah, it's just like, boom, moving. Right away. Yeah. So I don't know if you wanted to touch on much more before we got into the spoilers, because, you know, there's one big spoiler we have to talk. But
yeah, I mean, like,
that's pretty much my bit on it.
I think that the little girl who played Ellie, Jetty Lawrence, she did for what she was called upon to do. I think she was fine. Like, probably better than fine. She's actually
good.
Very good in the film. John Lithgow, very good in the film. That fucking cat is creepy as all hell.
The cat's great. I forgot to mention that. Yes. It's actually, I think, a bunch of different cats, but yes.
Yeah.
The cat
is great. But yeah, like, whatever they did, like, that cat was phenomenal. And there is one, well, there's two scenes of, like, one scene of, like, real gore that I thought was actually pretty cool. And then there's a pretty violent scene towards the back half, which I thought was okay. And directly plays off of the original film, so. But I think I know
the gore that you're talking about.
Yeah, it's in the hospital. So
yeah, yep.
I thought that was good too. Makeup effects on that. Like, there are things about this that are good. Just I did not enjoy it. Like, there are things I can point to and be like, "That's cool. That's cool." They had the basis for something here, because of course they did. Like, it's one of Stephen King's best books, but they just did not stick the landing, and I think the changes they made were for the worse.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess for me, I'll just kind of sum it up by saying, you know, like I said, for the most part, I was kind of okay with it. And in many ways, for the most part, this is just a very average remake that kind of hits the same beats. But the changes they made, I don't think helped at all. It felt rushed. And the ending is a big minus in my book. I'm going to give it a 2, Chris.
That's where I'm at.
It's unfortunate to say. And it's not like I hate it or anything, but there's just a few things that tipped it too far for me to give it a mild recommend. I think this thing's going to be as forgotten as that Thing remake. You know, it's like, I think I was nice to that Thing remake back when it came out, and, you know, gave it like a good review. But it's just like, does anyone remember that? Has anyone watched that since? Or
no? Fuck.
Or, you know, not that anyone thought this was good at the time, but like the Poltergeist remake. To me, this is like in that same league with that type of shit.
Oh, it's gonna be forgotten. I actually think that Poltergeist remake is better. Like
than this.
Yeah, I wouldn't go back and watch it, but. Like, I remember, it's fine. Like,
you didn't think it was better than Poltergeist, though, did you?
No, it's not better than the original. Like, I wouldn't be like, let's, like, if you would be like, let's watch the original Poltergeist or this remake of Poltergeist, I would be like, I'm going to watch the original because it's a fucking awesome movie.
But yeah.
That Poltergeist remake is fine. I feel that this is less than fine.
Yeah, I hear you, but I do think it's kind of the same caliber and also just, like, forgettable. Like, no one, I think, is going to think of this one in 5 years from now as the Pet Sematary. It's always going to be, again, even though I think the 1989 film is not aged great, I think that one's going to hold the crown for now, man.
Yeah.
The directors that did this actually got picked up because of their work on the previous film called Starry Eyes, which I don't know if you've seen. I personally don't love it, but it was a horror film they made in 2014. Kind of about a girl that wants to become famous, kind of like Neon Demon or something like that. I personally did not like it, but some people do.
Sure, they did the Valentine's Day segment in Holidays. I don't remember if that was any good.
I could not.
That movie was terrible, but
yeah, for the most part. So yeah, we're both coming in at a 2. God, it's not the worst thing ever if you're curious, I guess, but
yeah, yeah. There are worse things out there.
Yeah, and I think if you're, I don't know, for me personally, like if you're a Stephen King fan, it's not going to ruin your life to see this. It's a disappointment.
Yeah.
And most disappointing of all, we're going to get into the full spoilers here, is I think the ending. I agree with you. We haven't gone in depth like discussing this yet, like outside of the show, but let's get into it. I think it came off as really silly. And I guess we should describe what it is. You want to do the honor here?
Yeah, sure. So the original film, they have to kill Gage, who is the little boy, and this it would be Ellie. Gage, kills his wife in the original.
Yeah, he gets the mom and dumbass. Our dumbass fucking hero here in the original decided that maybe this time it'll work.
Right. Like his reasoning being that he had to dig Gage out of his coffin.
He'd been dead so long
for too long, right? Like, so if I bury her, like it'll be right this time. And it's kind of like plays into that. One, there are just dumb people that do bad things to themselves over and over again. They don't learn. And also like that, we don't want to let go.
Well, it plays into the central notion of the story, which is like, he does the thing with his kid knowing the risk.
Right.
And he does it again knowing the risk. Like, I think the ending of the 1989 film is good. It's a good idea. It's like a solid ending to the story. It fits thematically with the rest of the story. So not in the steamroll you there, but that's like animated when I think about it.
That's exactly what it is. So it's like it fits with what the theme is, and it makes sense. Like,
it feels right.
Yeah, it's not a happy ending. And to be fair, neither is this. But
this is just stupid, though. It's stupid and silly, and it doesn't feel like it fits the theme of the film at all.
It shits on the theme of the film, actually. Yeah. It's like, I guess we just stop dancing around it. So Ellie kills Rachel, the mom, and then does he bury her? Like, I don't remember.
No, instead of him burying the mom, she decides to do it. The dead daughter decides she's gonna like make an army of fucking zombies. Essentially. Yes.
So then, so dumb, the mom ends up killing the dad, Lewis, and then the ending is them coming out of the woods, the three of them, these zombie creatures.
Yeah, so like, she kills the mom, she buries the mom, brings her back, they kill the dad, they bury the dad and bring him back. And then it's like, and it's like kind of implied that they're just gonna like build this fucking army of undead. Like, it's so out of left field and not fitting in any way, shape, or form. Like, not the movie that you are doing. You're doing a creepy movie about there's a spot where you can bury people and they'll come back not right. And it's
like if you wanted to make a film about like bringing a zombie army back from the dead, fine. But that's not what you did for the hour and 10 minute, hour and 30 minutes or whatever up until this ending. Like, you're doing something completely different the entire time.
Dude, I just remember what I think is like the final shot too. It's like, so it's like they're like a family of fucking zombies rolling deep now, right?
Yeah.
And then like into the frame jumps the fucking cat on like the hood of a car. And it's like the cat is like, like their hell fucking demon pet. It's so stupid, dude. Like, it's so fucking dumb. Ugh, I hate it. I hated it. Yeah. It speaks to nothing. Yeah, it doesn't like, Let me ask you, is the ending of the book the same where like he decides that like maybe this time
marry his wife. Yeah, like this yeah. time it'll
you
be
you know right. why? Because that makes fucking sense, dude. Holy shit.
This it's is dark not... and it speaks to like the entire thing of like we don't want to let go, we don't learn from our mistakes. And this is I don't know what the fuck this is. It has no meaning, has it's, no purpose.
It says nothing. Yeah.
It's what are you doing? Like what is going on? Because it comes out of left field, and I guess like that was their intention. Like we're gonna throw this off and it'll be completely different.
But
it's does not do anything good for your movie.
No, you almost could have saved it with a better ending, but like it's just so off-putting. And
I think if they had just gone with the original ending, like I mean,
this would have been just like a forgettable remake. As yeah. instead, now it kind of sticks out a little more. It's like, oh yeah, that stupid ending too.
It's like it's a movie that they did a mediocre, like you know, in some cases, scene for scene remake of. Yeah. And then like, oh, we're gonna get him. We're gonna get him with the ending. We're gonna twist it up. Like, no,
no. I mean,
you twisted it up. You twisted it up, and you fucked it.
It makes me feel like it was made by people who don't care about the material. Because again, like, how can you take an ending that has meaning and speaks to the whole rest of the story and turn it into? There's gonna be a zombie apocalypse. What?
Like it strikes me as like they just didn't understand what
the point of
this was. Yeah. Like they read it and like, oh, this is cool. It's cool. Like it's a bird bring back zombies.
Instead of the husband brings her back, we're gonna have the zombie bring her back. Oh, I don't know, man.
Like it isn't, and that's also part of like that's something that Judd even tells him, like, I can't help you. Like when he's burying the cat.
Yeah.
I can't help you with this. You have to do it on your own because it takes a piece of you to basically do the magic. So it's like shits on that whole thing because like just like what is her burying the mom also?
She's already hollowed out.
Right.
What's it going to take from her? Yeah.
Oh, whatever.
Disappointing, man. Very disappointing. And you know, I personally don't see myself watching it again. I think it will be forgotten for real. I really do feel like this will be forgotten in short order. Whereas look at it, I think that new version of it, I don't know, man. Like I'm excited to see chapter two for sure. See, I hope they stick the landing on this. It's gotta be much harder to do it chapter two, I think.
I was really coming into this year, like being like, hey, this could be another like 2017, like where, you know, we're going to get a bunch of
it's cool Stephen King
stuff and it's like, not starting off good. I really hope that it turns out well, but I think like the back half of it is going to be the harder part. So
it's definitely gotta be, you know, like the first one you get to do like a period piece. It's about kids growing up, you know, adolescent stories are always kind of fun.
Yeah.
You know, you get that like Stand By Me vibe. I think this, who knows? We'll see how it goes, but I'm excited for it still. But yeah, this, I wasn't excited for it to begin with. There's like just a brief period of like 2 weeks of me being excited and then being let down. So I guess it could have been worse.
Yeah. So. I don't know what critics saw in this because
I think the festival, like shit that gets thrown at festivals gets a festival bump. Where it's like everyone's in a room, they're hyped up, probably on fucking coke and shit. Who knows? Like, yeah, hey, we're gonna see this fucking new Stephen King film before fucking anyone else, and then they get all kind of hyped up on each other's reactions to it. You know what I mean? And then they get into hyperbole very easily. That's what I think. I mean, it's my personal guess here. Because when the fucking actual critics, like the people that did not, I mean, I'm not saying the people that went to South by Southwest aren't critics, they are. But when the rest of the critics that did not get to go saw it, it didn't do so well overall.
It's actually dropped. Like when I originally saw the line, like it was had a fresh rating. I think it was like at 67 or 68. It's actually dropped now to under 60. It's considered a rotten movie.
I agree with that. And I think, you know, if you'd seen it very early on, it was probably like really high. Like it's probably 80s or 90s, and it's probably been dropping all the way since. So
yeah,
I just wish people would calm down for a minute before posting their reactions. Sometimes, you know,
yeah, maybe let the Coke wear off.
Yeah, or what, I mean, who knows? We all know they're too poor to afford Coke, so just taking shots at fucking film critics. Again, I'm sure some people genuinely like this remake too. You know, I'm not jabbing anyone's like professionalism here, but I do think some people definitely overhype things a little bit when they get to like, these special screenings like that.
I just don't know how anybody like comes out of this going, because like so many people have been like, it's so much better than the original, which the original is not well regarded outside, like amongst regular critics. But it's like, if you watch this, like, how do you not see that, like, that ending just shits on the theme of the film?
Yeah. Yeah. I can't agree with anyone thinking the ending's better. And I still can't agree with the switch either. Like, as for as good as a job the girl does here.
Yeah. It's not.
There's no way you're going to top a creepy little fucking 2-year-old.
No.
There's no way. And the kid did a pretty good job in that one too. And you know, for as much as I'm kind of like saying that 1989 is aged poorly, but like, boy, oh boy, when I was like 10 years old or whatever, when I saw that, or just when around the time it came out, that thing was kind of legendary at the time. And it was terrifying to me. It was one of those like movies that actually did scare me as a kid.
Yeah.
And again, a lot of it is thematically. It's just the thought about, you know, it's a movie really focused on dying and losing people. It's scary.
It's not like horror. A lot of times it's like, oh, it's the violence and it's the gore, but like
not
good horror actually has themes to it.
And, yeah.
Like, and if you hit on like good, scary themes, then like that is so much more effective than like any gore or violence that is going on, which is why like Hostel is such like a blah film. Like there's nothing going on there.
I would defend Hostel a little bit, but I won't tonight. I won't waste my energy.
We can get on that a different day.
I think there is some sort of like post 9/11 shit going on in that, and kind of like a xenophobia, and which is I for whatever reason like that movie gets under my skin is pretty effective, as well as its sequel.
Which I think is worse, but that's a different story.
Yeah, I guess one day maybe we'll talk about them. But
they also made a third,
which is like that one I will not defend. But the first two I would defend.
Okay.
But anyways, that's our show for this week. I have absolutely no idea what I'll have for next week because there's nothing coming out that I want to see in theaters at the
very No, least. I wanted to see Hellboy, but oh my God, are the reviews for that?
Did not turn out well.
And yeah. I just don't know if like even like I don't have to pay for it since I have A-list, so it's like I've already paid for whatever films I go see, but it's like, do I want to waste 2 hours of my time with that?
Yeah.
I think the answer's no.
No. Not for me. I was thinking about it because the director.
Yeah.
I was like, whatever, I'll give it a shot. You know, I got the pass, but not when I hear this. No, I'll pass.
Yeah.
So I honestly have no idea.
And we'll take a second.
We'll come back with a franchise next week, you know why. And whatever, if we do that, it'll be my fault, but we'll see. Tune in.
Movie dudes.